From Iowa Public Radio News, I'm Ben Kiefer. This is The Exchange. This hour, we talk about widespread sports injuries, especially among the youth, and what can be done to prevent them. I talk with journalist Mark Hyman. He says America's obsession with youth sports is harming our kids. His new book is titled Until It Hurts. Before that, we talk with Sophia Godfrey. She's a freshman at the University of Northern Iowa who has gone through two reconstructive surgeries due to sports injuries. We also talk with two specialists who work in physical therapy at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics. What do you think can be done to prevent youth sports injuries? Join our discussion right after this news. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Many parents wish their kids would move away from their computers, put down their iPods, cell phones, and devote more time and energy to physical activities. But for many children and adolescents, the problem is the opposite of being sedentary. Encouraged by parents and coaches, many with visions of glory and scholarships, too many young athletes are being pushed or are pushing themselves to the point of breaking down physically, sometimes emotionally. Later in the hour, I talk with sports journalist Mark Hyman. He says America's obsession with youth sports is harming our kids. His new book is titled Until It Hurts. He'll be joining me in the second half hour. Joining me for the first half hour, Sophie Godfrey, a freshman at the University of Northern Iowa, joining us from the studios of Iowa Public Radio in Cedar Falls. Good afternoon to you, Sophie.
Good afternoon to you, Ben.
Great to have you with us. Also joining us in the studios of Iowa Public Radio in Iowa City, Glenn Williams, assistant professor in physical therapy and rehabilitation at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics, also director of research for University of Iowa Sports Medicine. Glenn Williams, welcome to our studios.
Good afternoon, Ben.
Paul Persley with us as well, a physical therapist at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics. Welcome to you, Paul.
Thank you, Ben.
Let's start with your narrative, Sophie. You have had, three surgeries, all before the age of 18? May I ask how old you are now?
Yep, I'm 18 right now.
Okay. Yep.
Two of them were ACL and one was just meniscus.
Okay. So tell us about these surgeries, because ACL is not a household word for many of us.
Well, my first one, I was a freshman and it just basically, I was playing softball and I hyperextended it and it popped. I just thought it was a kneecap popping out of place, but it turned out to be an ACL tear.
This is a freshman in high school?
Yes, mm-hmm. in high school. And then my second one, I was a junior in high school, and I was playing basketball, and I jumped up for a jump shot, came back down, hyperextended again on my right knee, my other knee, and it tore again.
Mm-hmm. You've been a basketball player, involved in lots of sports since you were very young. How young did you start out with these sort of vigorously playing a number of sports?
Probably first grade. I started with soccer and dance. Eventually got into basketball around sixth grade or so. And I was in softball through Little League. So that was about sixth grade too. And track in middle school also.
Mm-hmm. Were these incidents where you needed surgery, the freshman in high school incident where you needed your first knee surgery, was that the first indication, your first sort of serious injury? I know we all get bumps and bruises when we go through school, elementary, junior high, and do sports, but was that the first serious one, or did you have other indications even earlier?
Oh, no, that was definitely my first one. I didn't even think that it would be a knee surgery kind of outcome. I thought it was just something simple like a sprain or something.
Mm-hmm. Let me turn to Glenn Williams and ask, what is an ACL?
An ACL is an anterior cruciate ligament. It's one of four major ligaments in the knee. There's an anterior and a posterior. It's right in the center, and it prevents the bone in the lower leg from moving forward on the large bone in the upper leg.
Mm-hmm. And so that tore in this case for Sophie.
Correct.
And what had to be done in the surgery then?
Well, they replace the injured ligament with a graft. Okay, usually it's from the person's own body, either their hamstring tendons or so that's the muscles in the back of the leg, or from the front of their knee, and they replace that ligament.
Mm-hmm. I want to have our listeners join our conversation this hour, this half hour as well. We want to have you chime in if your son or daughter or you have been seriously injured playing competitive sports. Perhaps you were injured as a youth due to sports. How has it affected your adult life, your well-being? What do you think can be done to prevent youth sports injuries? We'll have some views on that a little bit later. Perhaps you're a parent who felt you pushed your child too hard in sports. Tell us your story. 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org is our email. We're also on Twitter at IPR Talk. So what does it feel like to tear an ACL, Sophie?
I just thought it was a pop. It hurt at first, but I could walk on it afterwards. It wasn't too big of a thing. I didn't even think surgery. And yeah, it just feels like your knee pops out of place.
And then it just doesn't heal on its own. And so you have to have it looked at. And then surgery is the only way to get back to a better knee.
Yep, pretty much. I guess you can live without surgery, but especially being an active athlete, you definitely need surgery.
So you had the surgery. Tell me a little bit about your recovery. The recovery process. How long did that take after the surgery?
About 4 months. It was pretty intense. I did a lot of hamstring and jumping exercises just to get back in the game, mainly for basketball.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and it was hurting all this time, or that sort of faded?
It faded with time. It kind of hit a peak, and then after that peak, it kind of my muscles kind of grew back or got back in shape, so it was better.
Glenn Williams, I understand that girls are much more likely to injure an ACL than boys. Why is that?
There are a variety of different reasons. Genetics plays an important role in ACL injury. In terms of males versus females, a lot of focus has been on the mechanics, landing from a jump or when they cut, that they tend to go more knock-kneed. And that may be a component of it. There's some research on hormonal components. So during the menstrual cycle, there's a change in the collagen or the material of the ligaments, and so that they may be more lax. Whether it's male or females, we know that people that have smaller ACLs that are withstanding large loads in playing sports are more likely to tear. Mm.
Give us a list of the sports that are really tough on our knees and I suppose our ankles as well.
Yeah, it's going to be sports in which there's lots of jumping, cutting, pivoting, sports like football, basketball, soccer, or rugby are probably the big sports.
Paul Persley, you are a physical therapist at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics. University of Iowa Sports Medicine, which is part of the University of Iowa Healthcare, I understand, is offering a new injury prevention program for female basketball players between the ages of 13 and 15. Tell us about that.
Well, this is based upon a program that we put together for the University of Iowa women's basketball program following a series of injuries that they had. So the program is, like you said, for 13 to 15-year-olds. However, if there's the right 12-year-old or the right 16-year-old, they would certainly be welcomed within the program as well. The program is going to be a 2 times per week for approximately 6 weeks, with our first and last sessions being for objective measures to find out how high you jump, how fast you run, if you have any specific weaknesses that we can identify, as well as identifying landing mechanics, as Glenn brought up, mm-hmm. And the way that you move within your sport. So we think that if you move differently than, say, your male counterparts, you may be at a greater risk for tearing an ACL or having a knee injury. So we're going to look at the way that people move and see if we can't identify how we can make people both less injury prone as well as better performance on the field, on the court.
So we're looking at no sacrifice to a person's performance on the field or the court.
Oh, it should improve them. Performance. Mm-hmm. So if you've got someone who has some inefficiencies within the way that they move, we can identify that inefficiency and hopefully make somebody, their better first step performance, better vertical leap, mm-hmm. better able to respond to, what's across from them. So if someone's going to make a move to their right, you're better off making a move with them and being a better defender.
Mm-hmm. Why don't our bodies move naturally in a way that best suits our knees, our ankles? I know these sports have not been around since the dawn of humankind, Glenn Williams. But is this because these sports are sort of foreign to our bodies? And thousands of years ago, we didn't do these movements?
Yeah, I think that's part of it. I mean, playing sports, injuries are an occupational hazard of playing sports. Most of the time, your body does move pretty well, and it's actually surprising that more injuries don't happen. And most of these activities that the kids are performing when they do get injured, they've done the same activity for years. Mm-hmm. It's just this one time that they get injured. And so I think movement quality is very important, and things like the amount of crowd noise and how you're moving, whether you're bumped, and it's hard to control everything. But the program that Paul's talking about, in which we try to be self-aware of your movement and to perform better, I think is the way to go with trying to prevent these injuries.
Okay, we want to take calls in just a moment. 1-866-780-9100. If you have a personal experience with sports injuries, perhaps in your youth, tell us how it's affected your adult life, or perhaps a son or daughter has had a problem. 1-866-780-9100, the exchange at iowapublicradio.org. Before we do go to those calls, I'd like to go back to Sophie in Cedar Falls. Three surgeries before the age of 18. Now, when you return to sports after that first and second surgery, do you play sports now, by the way, after three surgeries?
No, I don't. I kind of avoid the contact sports from now on.
But after those first surgeries, I assume the second one, how did it feel getting back into play? Could you be as aggressive, as effective on the field, the court?
I was a little more hesitant just because it was my second surgery. I probably could have done my full potential, but with my meniscus also being torn in my second surgery, it kind of made it a weak period. It didn't exactly heal as properly as it should have, so it kind of limited my play, I guess.
Okay, let's go to our callers, 1-866-780-9100. Lisa is joining us from Iowa City. Good afternoon, Lisa.
Hi.
Yes,
I think a lot of sports injuries, like in prevention anyway, we need a lot more education for coaches and for the players. I mean, I ran track in high school and had a stress fracture my freshman year, and especially with the chronic injuries, like my coaches, I had complained of pain. I ran hurdles too, and, you know, it was never, maybe you should take a day off or go back on this. It was just, oh, you need to take more ibuprofen. And so I did that, and I ran for a good month on a stress fracture before the season ended.
Interesting story, Lisa, and what you said makes me want to ask our specialists here, do we need to raise awareness among our high school, our college coaches out there that ibuprofen is not the ideal answer in many cases?
Well, we typically don't treat ACL injuries with ibuprofen. However, we have attempted to get more information out to the public from the University of Iowa. We've actually sponsored a morning program at Carver Hawkeye Arena with the strength and conditioning coaches on ACL injury prevention, and we've had a couple of public symposiums as well. And we've had good turnouts, and I think the coaching staffs around the area are interested in this, and I think they are doing their best to try to incorporate some of the things that we talk about into their practices and those sort of things.
Okay, so what would be the key things that you think is three or four key things that coaches out there could change right now that would prevent knee injuries, other injuries, even if it's a change of mindset? What do they need to do more of, less of? Paul?
Well, for female athletes, there's particularly this point in time where they think that they may have a length versus strength issue, and that strength issue may be in their lateral or their outside of their hips. So working on doing some resistance training or movement training to improve the strength in the lateral portion or the outside of their hips could actually have a lot of good benefits, both in that performance realm as well as some of the injury prevention. So adding some sort of nonlinear or lateral motion training to their regimen would be a good idea.
Probably want to mention this at the end of the half hour, but we have about 10 minutes left. But please throw out information, Paul, on how people can find out, coaches listening, parents listening, youths listening, to find out more about this prevention program.
Well, you can always contact me at paul-persley or paul-persley at uiowa.edu. Also at our Sports Medicine Center, we can be reached at 384-7070. On our website, we also have information in regards to the program. So The information is out there. We plan on starting in a couple of weeks. It's going to be two times per week for 6 weeks. And I think that time is going to be in the evening, generally from 6 to 7-ish at night.
The cost?
The cost is $225. And through that program, we'll also have the objective measures as far as sports-specific vertical leap and those sort of things, as well as a home program that will be sent with each athlete, depending upon what we find as their potential deficiencies in strength and motion.
Okay, 1-866-780-9100 to join our conversation about sports injuries. Kara is joining us from Swisher. Hi, Kara.
Hello.
Yes.
I wanted to just comment. I, as a teenager, had a posterior cruciate injury and went through the surgery and a repair. Had a completely normal athletic life for the rest of my school years right through college. And now at 41 years old, have serious arthritis that is keeping me out of sports. So there was a very positive repair and now a little bit of a downside to it. The other thing that I wanted to comment on is that I'm now a high school coach in the Cedar Rapids area, coaching soccer. And our school is doing twice a week abilities program and three times a week weight training program through performance therapies, specifically for this purpose, to try and help our female athletes be prepared for their seasons and try to reduce their risk of injury.
Mm-hmm. I see here that every year more than 3.5 million children under 15 require medical treatment for sports injuries. So, Kara, for you as a coach, is the word getting out? Are coaches really raising their own awareness about this and seeing the need for change in the direction of prevention?
Well, I can't speak for other schools, but at Prairie, it's definitely getting out. The whole athletic department is trying to stress this and trying to get all of our athletes under the program. It started with just the girls last year. This year, it's the girls and the guys, the athletes that are out of season coming to this training. Our biggest resistance is getting parents and kids to understand the importance of it and to advocate that, to get their kids to these programs.
Yeah, you've got hyper-competitive kids and parents out there, right? Paul, Glenn, how much of a problem is that?
Well, certainly some parents want to continue to be athletes and do that through their kids, and it is putting pressure on children can be a problem. And so I think that in a holistic approach, I think the type of programs that they have at Prairie and Paul's talking about are the way to go. I think the people that run those programs do talk with parents. And I think both of our callers have brought up the idea of awareness. And I for one, would like to see more of this type of health education training in our school systems. I think that's very, very important.
So let's talk a little bit. Kara mentioned this, too, on the phone. Kara, you had this surgery, and then you had a period when you got better, and now you've got some arthritis in your knees. Glenn, what can you say about the connection between Kara's arthritis now and her earlier injuries?
It's significant. We know that about 50% of the people that tear their ACLs, even if they're young, end up with arthritis within about 10 years.
Why is that?
That's a focus of a lot of study. It's one of the major focuses of orthopedic research here at the University of Iowa. At the time of injury, there's a major injury to the joint, and what happens at time zero probably plays a lot into that. And so people are looking for interventions that can happen immediately that tries to maintain cartilage and limit the effect. There's also the rehabilitation afterwards and whether people are truly ever rehabilitated. Even though they get back to a high level of performance, that first year or two having really good function may affect the mechanics when you start to play. And there may be long-term effects, much in the way with a car. If your car gets out of alignment, you don't know until your tire wears to the point where you start to have problems.
Kara, thank you for sharing your story from Swisher. I appreciate it. And I want to go to Sophie quickly. Sophie Godfrey, a freshman at the University of Northern Iowa, several reconstructive surgeries, only 18 years old. So at the age of 18, Sophie, what do you see out there for participation in sports in your future? You've got a lot of life ahead of you.
Yeah, probably intramurals or something. Not as contact-related, probably flag football or something like that, not necessarily basketball. I mean, maybe playing for fun, just lightly, but nothing like before.
What regrets do you have? Would you have done it differently, considering the cost to you now?
I think everything kind of came out the way it should have, I guess. I mean, maybe if I would have slid into third base freshman year for softball, I wouldn't have had any of this kind of surgery talk, but I guess I can't really go back and change that. So, yeah.
Where did you feel the most push from? From within yourself, from parents, friends, excelling at these sports?
A lot of people. I'd say my family and my teammates, especially my basketball team, were basically like a family. They really pushed me to get back in there and try my hardest because I was one of the leaders and they needed me back in there.
Okay. Thank you very much. Stay with us there for a moment later. Sophie. Let's go to Bo in Des Moines. Hi, Bo.
Hello.
We've got just a couple minutes left. What's your story?
Well, I'm from Northeast Iowa originally, so I just want to come in. I played in a lot of sports. I went to a small school up there, and so we were all 3-4 sport athletes. And I had several injury problems starting in junior high, starting with meniscus problems in my knee, and being punctuated my senior year with rupturing a trapezius muscle in football and tearing ligaments in my ankle and track. And to this day, I still have knee, ankle, and neck problems from those injuries. And it's really interesting because I have since coached some high school football. And the thing that kind of troubles me, both when I was a player and as a coach, is the peer pressure to hurry back from such injuries.
Mm.
I recall, you know, right after I got hurt, fellow teammates tell me, go to this doctor so they can sign the waiver so you can play.
So we can win state this year.
Yeah, and, you know, it's like I went through the physical therapy, I hurried it, and the first week I came back, I went to go try to get into the practice, and first time I hit somebody, my right arm went numb. And it's like, I look back on that as regrets, like, if I just were to let my body heal, I can only speculate what it would be, what my body would be like today.
Mm-hmm. I want to get, it's a great point you raised, Bo, and I want to get some information from our specialists here. Is that part of the awareness raising that you can't send these boys and girls out as quickly as you have been? You've got to give them more time for recovery that suits the injury.
I think we have to go with a stepwise progression when we get athletes back into sports. You know, we're so worried about getting, you know, someone back to running, but if they can't walk effectively, they can't run effectively. So there are times when we have to hold the reins back on the athlete as well as the parents and coaching staff. So, you know, it's really walking a fine line between trying to get the most out of the performance as well as trying to make someone a healthy 35-year-old, 40-year-old, 50-year-old. So we have to really try to temper what we do to try to take in that whole organism, before we get them back to elite sport.
Okay, we've got just a few seconds, time enough for you, Paul, personally, to mention that contact information for this new University of Iowa Sports Medicine program, prevention of injuries for female basketball players.
Once again, I can be emailed at paul-persley, that's P-U-R-S-L-E-Y, at uiowa.edu, or you can contact us out at the Sports Medicine Center at 384-7070.
Paul Persley, thank you very much, physical therapist with UIHC. Glenn Williams, assistant professor in physical therapy and rehabilitation at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics, director of research for University of Iowa Sports Medicine. Gentlemen, thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
In Cedar Falls, Sophie Godfrey, thank you for telling us your story. I hope you play plenty of sports and have fun doing it in the future, Sophie.
Thank you very much.
And thanks to all our callers. Bo, thank you for calling from Des Moines. When we come back, Mark Hyman, a journalist and author, Until It Hurts is his new book, America's Obsession with Youth Sports. When we return, this is Iowa Public Radio. It's the exchange from Iowa Public Radio News over the noon hour here on Iowa Public Radio News's news stream. I'm Ben Kiefer. Monday on this program, we talk with the congressional candidates vying to represent Iowa's 2nd District. First, we'll speak with two-term Democratic incumbent Congressman Dave Loebsack, and then his Republican challenger, Marionette Miller-Meeks. That's on Monday. Loebsack is accusing Miller-Meeks of flip-flopping her position on privatizing Social Security, while Miller-Meeks says Loebsack has changed his position on the Bush tax cuts. You can join our conversation Monday at noon with the congressional candidates vying to represent Iowa's 2nd District with November 2nd fast approaching. Today we're talking about sports injuries especially among the youth. Many parents, as we remarked in the first half hour, wish their kids would move away from those computers, a common complaint. Put down those iPods, cell phones. Why don't you get out and play? More energy to physical activities. Many children, though, and adolescents, the problem is the opposite. Encouraged by parents and coaches, many with visions of glory, scholarships, young athletes are being pushed or pushing themselves too hard to the point of breaking down physically, sometimes emotionally. Joining me now to talk about this is sports journalist Mark Hyman. He writes about this problem in his new book, Until It Hurts, America's Obsession with Youth Sports and How It Harms Our Kids. Mark Hyman also writes about sports for Business Week and other publications. Good afternoon to you, Mark Hyman.
Hi, Ben. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you with us. You start your book with a story about your son and what the motivation was to write this book. Tell us that story.
Well, my son is now 22, but all through his early years as an athlete, I was his coach, and baseball was our sport. And he was always a little bit taller than the other kids, always threw a little bit harder than the other kids, and more accurately. And as a result, he often ended up pitching. And from age 7 or 8 until about 14, he was usually pitching for a team that I was coaching. Mm-hmm. And when he wasn't pitching, he was catching, because a good, accurate throwing arm is important for a catcher, too. So, over a period of years, I think he pitched more than was really healthy for him to pitch, always within the rules of the leagues we were playing in, but too much. And when he reached age 13, he came to me at the end of a season and shared with me that his shoulder was bothering him. And I think he was expecting to, get a response from a parent instead of the response that he did get, which was more of a coach's response, I think, which was basically, well, let's get it checked out and see what the doctor says. We did see a physical therapist, and the therapist advised us that Ben probably shouldn't be pitching for a couple of weeks at least. But I was very focused on the playoffs later that year, and I put him back in a game several days later, and he was hurt, and ended up taking him out of that game. And it was kind of a wake-up call for me. I realized that at that point that in some ways his youth sports career had become more about my ambitions for him than really about him.
Mm-hmm.
And
in that deciding game, what actually happened? Did he just, his arm get even worse? Was there a scene there that stands out in your memory that really was the turning point for you as a father and a coach, where you turned more back into a parent rather than the coach?
Yeah, there was. He started the game. This was, a playoff game. It sounds, it sounds irrational now looking back on it, but I used him as the starting pitcher in this what seemed to be a very important game. And he threw maybe a half dozen pitches. And it was so clear to me, not only as his coach, but as his dad, that he really was in pain. And I really felt a sense of shame about it. And at that, if you're talking about turning points, that really turned me on to this issue as a journalist. And also as a dad, I realized that, in a sense, as I say, I had turned this into some kind of referendum about myself as a coach. There's a certain status attached to having a child who's a superior athlete. You feel good about yourself.
Right.
All of those emotions, I think, conspired to put me in that situation. And I mean, what I write about in the book is that we're not talking about the lunatic fringe here. I think that many parents can relate to this story, and that's why I told it in the book, because I think it's a fairly common experience for parents and one that we need to talk about. It's good therapy.
Sports journalist Mark Hyman is my guest for this half hour. If you've just joined us, his new book is titled Until It Hurts, America's Obsession with Youth Sports and How It Harms Our Kids. Do you have an experience that is reminiscent of what Mark went through as a parent slash coach? You a parent who felt you pushed your child too hard in sports? Or are you a child or are grown up and as a child, your parents or someone pushed you too hard? You have thoughts to share with us this half hour. 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. Our email is theexchange@iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Twitter at IPR Talk. So how typical, you have some statistics in your book after sharing that narrative in it about you and your son. How many more of us are there like you and your son out there across the United States? Give us some statistics.
Well, it is, you know, it's a reported book. The story about my son and me is a small part of the book. And you know, among the statistics that I discovered were that 3.5 million kids a year suffer a sports injury that requires the attention of a physician. And here's the really interesting part. I mean, there are two major types of sports injuries. One is traumatic, and that would be the kind of injury that I think we're all familiar with in sports, where, you know, you get hit in the head with a ball, or somebody kicks you in the shin, or you get elbowed, you know, going for a rebound. Those are, you know, traumatic injuries that occur unexpectedly, and although they can be diminished, you're never really going to completely eliminate them from sports. They're inherent to playing.
Mm-hmm.
But the other 50% are the result of simple overuse, just kids doing the same thing over and over and over again until their bodies just can't withstand the stress. And they get hurt for that reason. And those injuries, by definition, are totally avoidable. If you just exercise a little restraint and moderation, those injuries could be completely eliminated.
Right. A lot. I mean, that repetition of your son or any pitcher throwing 70, 80, 90-mile-an-hour fastballs on the whole shoulder-arm apparatus is tremendous, isn't it?
Yes. And in fact, my son, when he was a senior in high school, ruptured the ulnar collateral ligament in his pitching elbow and ended up having an operation that we read about a lot on the sports pages called Tommy John surgery. And that, you know, he injured his elbow in that particular game, but it really is a classic overuse injury that's the result of, you know, stressing that joint over and over again over a period of many years.
Mm-hmm. So what can you identify as the biggest problems in youth sports culture today?
Well, gosh, that's such a great question and a huge one. You know, one thing I would point out that I think is really a cultural issue, kind of if you're looking at this from a macro perspective, is the extent to which we no longer distinguish between sports that, you know, professional and college sports and sports for kids. I mean, there was a time when no one was mistaking the Little League game, you know, down the street with, you know, a Major League Baseball game that you would see on TV. There was a chasm between those two varieties of sport. But now, you turn on TV, and virtually every weekend, you can watch high school kids playing sports on TV. Sometimes you can watch kids who are younger than that on TV. Sports for kids have become spectator sports in a sense. Mm-hmm. They've become entertainment for adults.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but very early on in the conversation, Mark, junior high or maybe even earlier, it's recognized and parents talk about it, kids talk about it. This could be a ticket to a multi-million dollar career.
Well, that's the other big evolutionary change, Ben. You know, I'm in my early 50s, and when I was playing sports in the 1960s as a kid, no one looked at sports as a career path, as a means to an end. You were just, that's what you did.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you played baseball in the spring and summer, and you played football or soccer in the fall, and basketball in the winter, and it was just a natural part of growing up. But now, I mean, not everyone, of course, but many people view sports as some kind of career path, as a ticket to perhaps a college scholarship, or a professional career, or even the status that accrues from being on an elite travel team. That's very different.
We focused a lot this hour, also in our first half hour, and we talked to physical therapists here in our studio about the focus on the physical side, but you also address the emotional side in your book. What can you say about the potential injury emotionally and what will be carried throughout life because of that?
Well, you know, one of the troubling aspects of this is that the kids are dropping out of sports in great numbers. You know, we talk about the obesity epidemic and why kids are not physically active, which is, you know, the other side of this coin. 70% of kids drop out of organized sports by age 13. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, that's startling to me. It seems like as adults we haven't done a very good job of creating this environment if 70% of kids are opting out by age 13.
And have you heard this story? Because I've heard it, and I haven't even been looking for it, is kids at about that age just drop out, and you say, why? And they say, it's just not fun anymore. There's too much training, too much practice. It's too intense. It's hyper-competitive. That's a story you hear as well.
You know, there's been a lot of research around this, so we don't have to guess about what kids' motives for leaving sports are. And just as you say, the kids, you know, they're articulating reasons that are kind of intuitive. It's just not fun anymore. And they're only doing it for one reason, to have fun, to be with their friends, to escape, you know, the pressures of their real lives. And if we take that away from them, then there's really no reason for them to be playing.
Mark Hyman is my guest, sports journalist. His new book, Until It Hurts, America's Obsession with Youth Sports and How It Harms Our Kids. His story, his remarks resonate with you, and you've got a story to tell of your own. 1-866-780-9100, the exchange at iowapublicradio.org, our email. We're also on Twitter at IPR Talk. Jim is with us from Spencer up in the northwest part of the state. Hi, Jim.
Yeah, I had to discourage my kids from competing with the organized sports that the schools were offering. I felt like there were just not enough opportunities for them to enjoy their childhood and actually play at sports, and that the schools were saddled with the responsibility to be like a training camp. I didn't feel like our schools were really intended to offer that service to the professional sports and the colleges, and that it really wasn't you know, to our best interest to put that kind of you know, force and money and person power and our children's health into, you know, seeing what professional sports could get from our community.
Mm-hmm. And was your son or daughter in tune with that change in thinking?
Oh, yeah. They participated in theater and arts and enjoyed all of that, and they were just as competitive as anybody else, and their knees and hips are fine.
Mm-hmm. There is also, in every community, there is the competitive sides, the clubs you can join in the schools or whatever. And aren't there, Mark Hyman, also sort of recreational, a soccer club that is more for fun than for winning?
Yeah, there are often two paths that you can choose as a parent and a child. One is as you say, you know, the local rec league, which is, you know, more of a full participation league. And the second is the elite or club level, which, you know, for some kids, that's a stepping stone above the rec league experience. For other kids, it's just a different path. But, you know, I'm not anti-youth sports. I think sports for kids are great. And my agenda is to encourage kids to participate throughout their lives, not only as kids, but into adulthood. And similarly, I'm not anti-competition. I think that there are kids who are very talented and want to compete at the highest levels, and that's great too. You know, my issue is that the parents have to let that happen kind of organically. It can't be coming from the parents. It can't be the ambition of the parents that's driving it.
Mm-hmm. So if their parents out there right now asking themselves, ooh, have I been pushing John or Karen too hard out there. How does a parent know what is too hard? What is the difference between healthy encouragement, backing your child, and pushing too hard?
Well, the book that I've written is just filled with anecdotes and I think advice that's on this point. And if I could, I'll tell you a couple of stories.
Yeah, we've got about 5 minutes left. Just keep that in mind, please.
Okay. Well, here's one. Gentleman in Minnesota, Rochester, Minnesota. His name is Michael Stewart. He's an orthopedic surgeon, and he has 4 children, 3 of whom have played in the National Hockey League. So he's got some pretty good experience. He told me that before each hockey season, he would ask each of his kids, "Do you want to play hockey this season?" Knowing full well that they were very motivated and wanted to play, but he wanted to make it clear to them that that was not his expectation. If they wanted to play, he wanted to be there to support them. Mm. But it was not about him and his ambition for them.
Mm. Okay, so that may be a good rule at the beginning of each season. And then to also, if the child says no, maybe says, I didn't think it was fun last year, I don't want to do it again this year, that we don't come down on them in any way, right? They made the decision.
There are lots of ways to be active. You know, I'm not a child psychologist. I'm just a journalist and a dad. But you know, I think that the lesson that I've learned from the reporting in this book is that the child has to take the lead.
Okay, let's go to David in Iowa City. What do you have to say to this, David?
Yes, this is David.
Yes, go ahead.
Well, I've actually got a couple boys who are like 16 and 11, and I've really pushed hard over the time for them to do like multiple sports, not focus. I actually own part of a gym that focuses on youth athletics, but I'm always trying to be very, if they want to do it, that's nice, if not, because they have academics. But we've actually run into it with my younger son, especially with from a competitive standpoint, that because he, in baseball especially, because he tried out for another team, the board of directors of the one club basically would not allow him to do it because he wasn't committed enough. So it's, you know, it seems to be a very much double-edged sword.
Mm-hmm. So it's a vetting process that goes along. Are you a serious athlete or aren't you? And we're talking to a 9-year-old kid.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm getting this letter from the board of directors of this baseball club, and it's, I mean, I guess I don't understand how they can hurt an 11-year-old child and what it proves to whether his parents are committed or not, which it seems very anathema to what I've tried to do with the children, just tried to let them experience things.
Right. Interesting. David, thank you for that, sharing that from Iowa City. So we've got a couple minutes left here, Mark Hyman. What is the path to a more healthy approach to youth sports? If we've got some unhealthy symptoms here, a lot of injuries. You said 3.5 million children under the age of 15 requiring medical treatment for sports injuries. How do we get this healthier for our kids, for our system? It's a big system built around it now, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I think there are a couple of you know, simple things that you can do. You know, as a parent, I think at the very early in a child's life, you want to think about what are your goals for them in sports. Is it a college scholarship? If it is, I think in some ways you're setting yourself up for a disappointment because the percentage of high school varsity athletes who go on to play in college is significantly less than 3%, and the percentage who gets actual money is even less than that. So that, I think, if that's your goal, you're setting yourself up for something less than a good experience. But sports has so much to offer kids just in terms of building self-esteem and friendships and, you know, just basically being active throughout their lives. So to me, if your kid, you know, survives his youth sports experience and wants to continue participating in sports into adulthood, then you've done a very good job as a parent.
Mm-hmm. What is the biggest criticism? We've got about a minute left. What is the biggest criticism you've received in bringing out this book and the viewpoints? Have you got some ones that just made you really wonder?
Well, a couple of things. I think that, you know, some people read the stories in the book and make the point that you know, these are the most egregious examples of adult behavior, and you know, there's some merit to that. This is not a book that's filled with stories about kids and families that have had great experiences in sport. That's another book for maybe down the road.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just trying to make the case here that sports is a very positive thing as long as we remember that it's about the kids and allowing them to have, make the decisions and have the experience they want.
Okay, very good. We'll leave it there. Thank you very much for joining us, Mark Hyman. Your new book is titled Until It Hurts, America's Obsession with Youth Sports and How It Harms Our Kids. Mark, thank you very much for sharing your book with us.
Thanks, Ben.
The Exchange is produced by Lindsay Moon, Alex Hoyer, and Catherine Perkins. Technical support from Dennis Reese. We also had help today in Cedar Falls from Phil Moss. The executive producer of Iowa Public Radio's talk shows is Jeff Schmidt. Podcasting and on-demand audio of The Exchange available at iowapublicradio.org. Perhaps you heard the last bit of this conversation with Mark Hyman and want to hear the entire hour because it was all focused on youth sports injuries. Go to iowapublicradio.org and find a podcast or on-demand audio of this entire hour as well as our other hours of programming. Our theme music was composed and performed by Dan Knight. The Exchange is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. Coming up on Monday, once again, we'll talk with congressional candidates vying to represent Iowa's 2nd District, Congressman Dave Loebsack and Republican challenger Marionette Miller Meeks. That's on Monday at this time. The Exchange is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.